0101. Okay, if you remember, we draw in our notes electric field like this and magnetic field going like this in circle. But we, though we drew those two components at the same time, it doesn't exist at the same time. We just show it that way. But if you put a time dependence at t equals 0 and relate it to the phase, at one point when the E is maximum, there's no magnetic field at all in the cavity. And it, E is pointing in this direction. After 90 degree, H becomes maximum. I may have got the direction wrong. You have to check with the formula, with the plus or minus I. But if this way, then after another 90, E flips. That's what happens. And then there's no again magnetic field. And then after another 90, no electric field, and the magnetic field goes. So, and after this one, it goes back to this. So that's how it oscillates with the time. So with that one, let's go to the right here. Okay, so we talked about this one a little bit, but we'll go through again. So what I had asked was, so Todd has these numbers on the website with the lecture notes. So you can use these numbers and calculate.
And I put them in the homework.
Yeah,
too.
And I thought, you know, why just favoritism to TMs? So I put two more TE. And you can, the modes are here. You can look at it here too on the network analyzer. So you can write it down from here and see whether you get it. So that way you know you got it right. So after I finish this one, we can look it up here. So so what I'm asking in here is to calculate the cutoff frequencies for these five modes. And for the TM, the cutoff is given by this one, right? So what you need is the roots from the normal Bessel functions, X and J. For the TM and for the TE, what you need is the roots from the derivative of the normal Bessel functions, X prime, right? And so you need both A and L for both the cavities. And in here, and these are the roots, right? So you can use these numbers to calculate that one. So you'll see which order they come. And then by the measurements, you can compare how accurate you got it with roughly measured length and radius. Okay, so that should be easy to do. You can even just put it on an Excel.
Yeah,
and it'll just give you the numbers. You don't need to even do it in a...
You just need to be careful about units.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, so we went through these. So, I fixed this one, the one that Todd uploaded. I put them as an image. This is my copy. So you have the right formulas there to calculate the energy gain and gradient for a given cavity, for any mode. So what we've looked at so far was pillbox shape, right? A cylindrical cavity this way. Actually, the cavities look like elliptical shape, right? So the transformation happened. I just wanted to show you. This is the actual shape of the cavity. It's little complex than a simple pillbox cavity with a radius and a length L. You have a curved shape, and this curvature, this shape is dependent on many other parameters. I don't want to go into too much details, but like multipacking and so on, if you guys are interested, just you can read a simple RF cavity, like a tutorial paper. I can put a link here if you guys are interested.
An important rule of thumb is avoid corners.
Yes, avoid
corners. Corners are where things spark.
Yes,
corners
exactly.
Are where high voltages are generated. Just like, you know, Van de Graaff generator is a sphere, and if you, you know, reach out with something with a point on it, that's where the lightning bolt hits, right? So high electric fields get generated around corners, and that's why If you want consistent electric field everywhere in your cavity, you make it nice and curvy everywhere.
Yeah. And you would be optimizing just not R and L now. You have, so this is the shape of a half cell. This is like a half cell. So you have a elliptical radius B and A for this top part, and another radius, two radii here, and this angle. So you play with many more parameters to get an optimum shape. And even though we avoided the corners, the field looked like the same. So this is the electric field. Oh, this is not the, can somebody tell me what mode is this one? It's not 010. I thought it's 010, but
no,
it's not 010.
That one's 020 or something, or 0.
No.
0, yeah.
It's a 110.
110, 110, yeah. That's right.
So it's same as this one.
It's in the,
this one.
Pictured in there. There you
yeah.
go.
So I need to fix that too. I'll fix it. I want to show it the TM010, and these are simple elliptical cavities. This is niobium copper. I think this is aluminum probably, or steel maybe even. So this is what the actual cavities look like at the end. Okay. Now, so far what we've looked at is cavities and in terms of electromagnetic field perspective, right? But when we build cavities, we should be able to use them in a machine and design the cavity effectively to accelerate the particles and to get the maximum performance. So there are certain things that related to cavities we call RF properties in cavities. One of those is the stored energy, right? So when we have electromagnetic field inside the cavity, it stores a certain energy. So the stored energy, you can integrate the electromagnetic field given by this in the whole volume. So this is a volume integral. You have to do r dr d theta dz in the cylinder to integrate this one. So if you integrate these two formulas, okay, what you end up getting is this one. So I did say that when E is maximum, H is equal to zero, right? So that way you can use the maximum E field and forget about the magnetic field, maximum electric field, and forget about the magnetic field component and integrate this one. And if you just use the magnetic component where the magnetic field is, you will still end up with the same formula. So if you use a phase in between with both components, or just at the maximum case, the stored energy is the same. So for a given cavity, it's the field, the stored energy is a constant, though the field is oscillating. So if you guys are interested, you can integrate it and have some fun. And the next one is the how much is the power loss. So when we have electromagnetic field in a cavity with a metallic surface, there's always losses, right, through the, because of the losses through the surface. So what you want in a cavity is maximize the stored energy and minimize the wall losses. That's how you improve the performance. And there is a name for this this parameter when you minimize the losses and maximize the stored energy, which is called the quality factor. It's there at the end, and I'll come to that. So based on what kind of material the cavity is made, if it's a copper in a normal conducting metal, this is how the surface resistance is calculated. It's dependent on mu, which will be the mu naught, since inside a vacuum. It's dependent on the frequency, so surface resistance varies as the square root of frequency, right? And then depend on the sigma, the conductivity, by this way. So the surface loss, or the power loss due to the losses on the surface, is a surface integral, right? In the stored energy, what we had is a volume integral. But what you're going to have on the power loss is a surface integral. Okay, so that's the difference. But it's now here we integrate the full field content inside the cavity, right? But when we integrate for the power loss, what you want is the magnetic field parallel to the surface. So instead of the full field content in the cavity, what you integrate is the parallel edge component along the surface, and that's what contributes to the losses. So this is the integral part. So once you integrate it, this is the general formula for this one. So you can use this one to calculate for given mode. So this is for the TM010. So you can use other field components also to calculate the power loss for other modes. But since we are interested on the TM010 mode, this is the formula that gives you the power loss for a given cavity with length A and L. And since the conductivity is dependent on the frequency, you need to know what the operating frequency of the cavity too. So this is the second parameter. So let's look into a little bit about the surface resistance part. This is at the beginning of the chapter, but I moved it to here, so it's kind of related. So what we want is, if I go back to, this is the copper conductivity, right? And if you look at the surface resistance here, it's inversely proportional to the conductivity, right? RS is proportional to square root of sigma. So what you want is to increase the conductivity so you can reduce the resistance, right? Once you reduce the resistance, since the power loss is directly proportional to the surface resistance, right, you can reduce the surface loss. Because when you have a certain shape, right, it has a certain field profile. So this one would be for the given shape, right, will be constant, right? That field profile for that given shape is what it is, coming by the design of the cavity. But based on what kind of metal you use to build, you can independently control this one. So the highest conductivity is in copper in the normal conducting cavity. So that's why we use copper to build the normal conducting cavities. And if you consider superconducting, this is the formula that you can use for normal conducting cavities. This doesn't hold for superconducting cavities. It's a whole different theory there, and depends on what you call superelectrons and normal electrons and their ratio. So we will not go into those details, but let's look at just about the normal conducting cavities. So what causes the losses in the surface is something called the field penetration. So this magnetic field that's parallel into the surface penetrates into the metal, okay? And the length how deep it penetrates is what we call the skin depth. And that's how it relates to the conductivity. It's also dependent on the frequency, but now it's not square root of frequency, it's square root of 1 over frequency. So we don't want too much field penetration so that we can cut the losses. And also there's another effect that's called the Anomalous Skin Effect. So for the idea of the Anomalous Skin Effect, or the concept behind, is when we have different operating temperatures, okay, even though normal conducting, at higher temperatures the conductivity is not changing based on the temperature, so it would just vary like this. But if you go to very lower temperatures, okay, if you look at here, it doesn't just follow uniformly, but it saturates at a different level. So you need to adjust into this one when you operate at lower temperatures and adjust your dependence on the conductivity so that you can get a correct surface resistance even at normal conducting temperatures. So this is not exactly this animal skin effect also exists in superconductors, and also exists in normal conductors based on the operating temperature. So in the accelerators, we operate the cavity at very low temperatures, right? So that's the fact that you need to take into account when you calculate the losses. So the other parameter that I said, which I mentioned, is the quality factor. This is what determines the performance of a cavity ultimately. So it's defined as a ratio of frequency times stored energy divided by the power loss. Okay? So what you want is as high Q as possible. So as high Q as possible means for a given frequency or a given 1 RF cycle, you have maximum stored energy, which is U, maximum stored energy, and minimize the power loss, right? So when you reduce power loss, it also increases the Q. When you maximize the stored energy, that also increases the Q. Okay, so that's what determines the performance. So for normal conducting cavities like copper, what we have is Qs varying from 10 to 3 to 10 to the 6. But in superconducting cavities, superconducting radio frequency cavities, we have Qs varying from 10 to the 11, 10 to the 10, 10 to the 11, and even sometimes little above 10 to the 11 too. So this is how a normal cavity performance would look like. When you measure the cavity performance with quality factor as a function of the electric field gradient. So the field gradient, we looked in on Tuesday. This is the formula for gradient. So what you want is as higher gradient as possible so you can get a larger gain, but with a constant Q. Okay, so this is why this ideal curve is there. You want a higher gradient with a constant Q. Right, you don't want the Q to drop, and higher Q as possible. But what we end up getting most of the time is a Q like this, right? So we don't want to operate at a place like here, even though the gradient is high, because the Q is low, the losses are higher then. So we would tend to operate in a place like this with a 10 megavolts per gradient. So the Q is good, so the losses are less and you don't need too much power to put into the cavity, but then what you gain out of the cavity is very low. It's only about 10 megavolts per meter. So that means you would need many more cavities to get the energy you want. So the gradient decides how many cavities you would want, and Q decides how many power you want to operate that machine. So you would want to put as less power and get higher gradient. So that's why it's important that when we build cavities, we try to get good performance with a flat Q, with as much as high gradient as possible. So that's the idea behind the Q curve. Oh, so that's
the end of those slides.
That's the end of the RF cavities.
So there is a document I had put on older class links. I'll put it on our class in reading material. It might even already be down there, but I'll pull it up into the material available for these sessions. And it talks about, so cavities, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Suba's done really well explaining, you know, the electromagnetic resonator aspect of cavities. You can basically model them as simple harmonic oscillators. I mean, they're simple harmonic oscillators that have a certain frequency for a particular mode. And because there's resistance in the surface that takes energy out of that oscillating field, they're damped harmonic oscillators. And because you're also constantly putting electromagnetic energy into them to keep them going, they're driven damped harmonic oscillators. So as good young physicists, you can write down your, you know, basic driven damped harmonic oscillator thing, put in a damping term, put in a driving term, write down the second order differential equation, and look at some things about what solutions of the damped driven harmonic oscillator looks like, and start drawing some direct parallels between, okay, this is what it looks like in kind of mechanics, and this is what it looks like in electromagnetics and RF cavities in particular. So that little note is only about, I don't know, 6 or 7 pages, but it starts off from the very general driven damped harmonic oscillator and ends up talking, you know, about exactly, okay, how does the damping relate to Q, this thing, and then how do some of these things connect together, and in fact, how does a cavity's performance, how does it resonance curve as it's being driven at different frequencies look compared to a driven damped harmonic oscillator. So I'll put that into the links, and you know, maybe even assign reading that and doing a little exercise as part of next week's homework along, you know, with that later on, because it is a nice connection for undergraduate physicists to be able to say, oh, I'm not just learning about electromagnetic bells, but looking at a system and writing down an equation that looks a lot like other equations for other physical systems, including swings and other resonators, you know, is good. It lets you connect lots of pieces together. And driven damped harmonic oscillators are everywhere. Just like simple harmonic oscillators are everywhere, damping is always there, driving is always there. That's, you know, I wish I could just start a physics curriculum just teaching that for a semester, because it's everywhere, including in RF cavities, apparently. So far, so good.
So you guys want to have a look at this one?
Yeah. Let's, you know, for the rest of the class, let's just play. I'll go into Linux next class. And start that, and hopefully we'll have a bigger audience. But I am recording for everybody that's listening out there in the world. So I'll post the audio too. But play and look, you know, write down some of these numbers, because they may correspond to some of your homework numbers.
Yeah, I need to pull them out because it's kind of shifting them over.
Are you seeing the...
Yeah, it's ready. You can, if you have a USB stick, you can save it too, I think.
Oh, even better.
Yeah. So you can go look into the numbers later.
Then you can put it in your homework for extra credit.
Oh, what was that?
This was about one block. I want to check it. Like, at least this one had some peaks in it.
Which one? Oh, this is something else.
Yeah.
So what we are trying to measure is the transmission through the cavity. So we keep power through this cable, which is port 1. And you guys want to put the other one? And measure through the other one, so you can see it's already kind of picking up. So this one only measures from up to 4 gigahertz, so we can see only 2 modes, the way as 5, so the other ones are for the up 4 gigahertz. So this is one of the modes, which is 1.696. Okay, the other one is this one. So this need not necessarily be, the lowest frequency need not be the TM010, because if you go into this table, right, the zero is 2.4048 here, but there is a less smaller value, which is the J1 prime, which is 1.8412. So if you calculate, you can probably figure out which kind of mode is this one. And then this one is
is the TM010. So that's that one.
Okay, so this one is the TM010?
Yeah, I shouldn't have said that, but yes. So see whether you can get it.
Okay.
And see whether it's right.
Yes.
Don't believe me because I'm saying, I'm just... Because mm-hmm. when the cavity is thinner and the radius, the diameter is bigger than the this one, the TM010 is not the lowest one, it shifts. So that's what's the beauty of the R over L and playing with these roots. In here, I'm sure the TM010 is the lowest one. Okay, so you have these two numbers right now, 3.80 and the other one is 1.69, I think. Oh, so this is just a transition between the modes. Sometimes it flattens out. Sometimes this happens because of a crosstalk between the two ports too.
Okay.
If you kind of avoid it, it kind of moves off. Okay, so should I put it on the other one now? So if I had a larger scale, I could have seen other modes too, but this just only shows up at 4 gigahertz. So inside, what I have is a probe like this. If you open up, so it's already built in. Since I don't have it here, it's just drilled, so I need to put these two. And I need one of you's help to hold it, because it doesn't stay properly, since it's just drilled.
Need some sort of a coupling. Think of it like an antenna.
Yeah,
and that's
this
an
antenna, is
an antenna. Just sticking into that
so
space.
Okay. What's the electric field in a cavity like this? So now you all know, right? I'm just going to go with the coupling. So electric field inside the way like this at the center, right? And magnetic field goes like this.
Mm.
So I'm coupling through here means I'm actually coupling to the electric field. That's why you need an antenna. But if I'm coupling through here, this will not work. I need a loop. So there's difference in the couplings too. But that's
right.
Beyond
an antenna has generally has currents moving up and down along it.
And it is like a coax, right, with an outer and an inner. So basically what I have is a TEM that's going through this one. Okay, can other one? Somebody put this other one and I'll hold it. You need to put all the way in, I think. Because then it... Okay, just hold it there. Let it clear. Slowly move it out. And hold it there. I think see, it's shifting. So when you insert too much, what it does is it's actually damping the mold. So I'm all the way in means I'm all the way in this much in the cavity, right?
Mm.
So it's actually kind of killing the mold. So that's why the frequency is shifting. So just put it just enough, and that should give us the spectrum. And let's see. Okay, probably not enough.
Just barely insert the tip. And you're also, your finger is right on the tip of it too, so you gotta be a little careful about it.
Yeah. It's shifted too much. Or maybe it's too weakly coupled. If I had enough.
Yeah, you have a few peaks in there, but.
See, if I go in, it's really shifted, see?
Yeah.
So it would be interesting to see which one is the right mode. Okay, I'm coming out. Okay.
Let me. So this one is around 2.58. So it will be interesting to see whether that's the TM010.
That's probably not, right? So on that one, 2.58, this is, I remember, you know, 10 centimeters is about 1.5, right?
Yeah.
And this is not
this
so
is
far
15,
from...
15.
Yeah.
Close to 15.
Yeah, so this is, so the fundamental on this has got to be lower than 1.5 gigahertz.
So maybe we are too weakly coupled.
But that one was beautiful, right?
Yeah,
the other one.
Because it had good contacts, because I think it's not good contact, too. That's
yeah, so you don't have the good coax.
Yeah.
You don't have kind of a good coax coupling to it.
Yeah, I need to get to...
And this
to
is a really good coax coupling.
Yeah.
It really does change.
Yeah. It's not as clean as the other cavity. So this is what happens when you don't have good contact. See, it's all. Okay, alright. So I don't think the best way is to probably calculate it. And these are some of the other modes.
Because all of the, several of the dimensions are closer here, right?
Yeah.
This thing is closer to the same dimension
okay.
in all orientations. The modes are closer together.
Can
the modes are further apart.
Press peak left on here. Okay, yeah, that one.
Peak left?
Yeah.
Peak left?
One more.
There you go.
Yeah, one couple of more.
Get to that one, get to down to that fundamental.
Yeah, and see what that one is.
Yeah.
That's a 1.4.
Yeah. And that's probably close.
Probably like it, yeah.
That's probably close.
So you have to hold the cavity close to it, it's opening
for the
up.
TM.
That's more
TM
like it.
TM010 mode, right?
So see whether you get close to that frequency. And then we will. All right, thank you. Thank you for holding it.
Arm is cramping.
Yeah. Okay. 1.403.
Don't electrocute the students.
Yes.
That would be bad.
Okay. All right. So.
At USFIS, do they do magnetic coupling too? Do
yeah.
they put in a loop?
I do have loop coupling too. If I drill through one.
Yeah, and you can put you can hook in a loop coupling.
Yeah, I think I'll try to make good one out of this one.
Yeah.
Ask Kevin to put the piece here, and probably.
Because the loop coupling can be pretty
yeah.
strong. Right, if
yeah.
you've got a good size loop.
Yes.
And it's pretty clean too, because that's all you're coupling to the magnetic field. We did all kinds of these measurements on the HOM couplers for the C100 cavities with Ilk Young. I mean, I remember sitting down in CMTF just all day and all night getting these measurements.
This was our.
So I need to do kind of a similar one for the crab cavity.